So I just realized the fact that Nick is trying to crowd people into this room means that I'm speaking to a full house. And that means that the speaker's trick, where you imagine that your audience is naked, is really hard because there's so many of you and I can't imagine you all naked at the same time. So, I am really thrilled to be back in Berlin at my second Congress. I spoke last year on gorilla knitting, and I've been incredibly honored by how much discussion and how much creativity has been inspired by the lecture that I gave last year. And I can only hope that a few of you will be as interested in the thoughts that I have this year on information management and pornography. I'm still a doctoral student at the Graduate Center at the City University of New York in sociology. One of my special interests is the effect of technology on society. And as I study, of course, I learn that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Every new technology disrupts its society, creating unexpected problems as well as hoped-for benefits. Scene from Blade Runner. Our information overload, which feels like such a contemporary problem, is not new to the millennial generation or even to the boomer generation. It wasn't new to Vannevar Bush when he wrote As We May Think in 1945. And imagined that we could have a sort of Memex that would help us corral all of the disparate bits of information that we have to keep track of. When Frances Yates wrote The Art of Memory in 1966, she described memory castles that were actually used by medieval people and even ancients to keep track of information that was too unwieldy to be remembered by simpler means. And some of the things that they would keep track of were epic poems, so they would recite them at length. They might recite Ovid, who had lots of naughty bits in his poems. So ancient pornography. The organization and storage and retrieval of the information that we as humans produce has been a problem for millennia. We're inherently creative, and we make words, we make images, and we like to share them. So what's special about porn? Or to put it another way, what's so special about sexuality as a study, as a topic for serious study? Academically, it really is a special case. It turns out that if you talk about pornography and you use your real name, you're marked within the academy. My colleague, Audacia Ray, who wrote a really terrific book called Naked on the Internet, has written separately about her own problems being taken seriously as an academic. My mentor has told me privately that I should keep the porn or sex-related writing off my CV. And maybe I should use a pseudonym for that. But my friend Robert Lawrence said that maybe it was a little too late for that. And so perhaps I should use a pseudonym for my sociological writings. I wanted to mention these anecdotes specifically because they point to what's a general problem with the topic. Embarrassment about the subject matter complicates an already incredibly difficult information management issue. If you can't talk about what it is you're storing in any more detail than with a collective noun, porn, then none of the existing solutions for information management can even be brought to bear on the problem. So the canonical legacy porn storage problem was a stash of porn under the mattress or on a closet shelf or somewhere in the garage. There are some assumptions that are implicit in this ideal porn collection. It's kept by an adult man. It's relatively small. It might be replenished with a new material, but then old material might be thrown away to keep the size constant because there's an enclosed physical space that it needs to be kept in. The generalization I can make is that in the United States, despite almost certainly being sort of limited to newsstand purchases, and those would probably be legal, this collection would still be very, very private and kept physically hidden from a girlfriend or from a wife or from children. Although those collections are almost always found at some point, and hilarity and embarrassment ensues. Although this type of pornographic, although, of course, pornographic magazines are still sold, this type of porn collection is increasingly rare because digital porn has completely overwhelmed the market. And with this shift, there's no longer a single ideal type of porn collection, because there are as many different collections of pornography as there are individuals who save files of pornography. The privacy implications of this, I think, are really profound. And so I want to pause for a second and talk about that. Choosing to store pornography causes problems even for people who have nothing particularly perverted to hide. Any collection of pornography gets at the heart of what it means to be a private individual. Because as we've moved from mass media to individually produced media, from professionally edited collections of porn, such as magazines or commercially produced films, to individual snapshots, YouTube clips, stored BitTorrents, which might be made up of scenes from movies, the particularity of a collection of porn ends up being a testimony to its owner's particular set of tastes. So if your partner sees some porn magazines that you own and gets upset because there are a lot of big-breasted women, you might object that you have no control over what goes into the magazines and that you just wanted a lad mag. And that's what you get in the lad mags. But if your partner finds your porn files and sees that you've collected 2 gigs of images of different naked people who all happen to look like your ex, you're going to have a lot of explaining to do. Because clearly you were able to exercise some volition in curating that collection of images. Violet Blue spoke last year at Ars Electronica on this topic of privacy and our own erotic fingerprints. By the way, that talk and the talk I gave last year are both printed in the collection of essays from that conference, so you can find Johannes for Monochrome afterwards if you'd like to buy a copy. The book looks like that, and he helpfully made sure I had a copy. So I have one here. So. To continue, how we organize any of our data, fingerprints us, a music collection, or our library of books. But I think that nowhere is it more unique than if we have somehow cataloged or recorded our sexual desires. Violet pointed out, and I agree, that sometimes we're only honest in our own mind. With our most private desires, and that there are things that go unspoken even with a beloved partner, but that this is completely okay. It's just part of being human. We can request our right to privacy in that matter as well as in any other matter, and we shouldn't be embarrassed about it. As we should all know here at the Congress, of all places, just because somebody has a desire for privacy doesn't imply that they're doing anything illegal or illicit or even merely morally wrong. It's okay for some things to be private. However, embarrassment and privacy concerns, and often over-trumped legality concerns, all intermingle to make pornography a weird train wreck of a topic to study, because few people want to say what they mean with any specificity, and people squirm, and not really in a good way, if you try to make them be more specific. Librarians, for instance, who usually love to tag items and provide exhaustive metadata for materials in their collections, providing access to media is their job, are a complete epic fail on the cataloging of pornography. The Library of Congress cataloging system, which is not strong on subcultural material in general, is abysmally awful in pornography. The idea that somebody could get any sort of substantively useful information with subject titles like kink or sadomasochism with no further information underneath it is completely ridiculous. So depending on the library, if you know what it is you want and that it's in the system, if you have an exact title, then you can request it and withdraw it from a library. But if you don't know it, the exact title, then you'll have a very hard time doing a subject search. There isn't enough granularity in the catalog system itself to do that kind of subject searching, and there's no willingness to do the discussion that would be required to create the new categories in the Library of Congress system itself, sort of at the level of the American Library Association or at the OCLC level. Furthermore, books and videos that are of a pornographic nature are sometimes held in closed stacks and are not available for interlibrary loan. Protecting library holdings from damage or loss through obscurity feels like bad practice to me. There are some exceptions, but even the Kinsey Library at the University of Indiana, which is famous worldwide for its sexuality holdings, requires a lot of written statements from researchers saying what the nature of your research is and why you want to come use their collection. Excuse me. The desire to obscure what's stored makes the language of talking about pornography, even completely legal pornography, sometimes seem closer to the diction of corporate espionage or international spying. So mostly when we store information, we do want to retrieve it. And we'd be happy to have a straightforward cataloging methodology. So the latter's why the music freaks I know, one in particular, has his thousands of CDs completely alphabetized. And a few subgenres from that music collection are broken out, and they're alphabetized separately so that they can be accessed easily. But in my preliminary questioning of people who have been open to talking about their own porn collections has led to some startling anecdotes. So that same music freak stores his pornographic images on about a dozen CDs, which are simply labeled Porn 2000. Porn Early 2001, and so on. On the CDs, the folders sometimes mention a website that the images are from, maybe sometimes a specific model, sometimes just a month that they were downloaded. And when I asked more questions, he joked that sometimes instead of looking for new porn, he could say, "Oh, fall 2003, that was a good season for porn." So the CD storage, he said, was not to hide the pornography from his wife, and it wasn't to keep it off the main computer because there were any issues with it being on that machine. Thank you. There weren't any problems with it being... Oh, no! I walked away from the microphone. I'm sorry. There weren't any problems with the pornography being on his main machine, but he just wanted to... he had a smaller hard drive on that computer, and so he would periodically download the images, and so that's why they were sort of chronologically kept. And so I said, "Well, why don't you catalog it as thoroughly as your music?" And he said, "Oh, well, I would feel like a pervert if I did that." that would be paying too much attention to it. So to be clear, he was embarrassed to spend any effort organizing the porn because what it might mean about his identity, even though no one else had ever had any knowledge or interest in this collection. His own sort of thinking about it was like, oh my God, I would be a pervert. So another person I talked to said that he did have a girlfriend whom he wanted to hide the porn from. I was very clear about that. So he described it as being very straightforward, kind of pictures and videos of pretty naked girls, nothing too kinky. And I said, so can you give me an example? And he said, like abbywinters.com. So here you go. So this was an example of the kind of site that he likes. And he said that this is a site that he sometimes subscribes to for like a month at a time and downloads a whole lot and then unsubscribes. And then he has a few sites that he kind of shifts between. So that, these are, each of the sites is one that he trusts to not, you know, sell his personal data, for his bank card data. And he can switch around when he wants to look for new stuff. When I asked, though, he mentioned that his interest in the novelty wasn't related to running out of porn, and that, in fact, he was sure he had more than a lifetime's worth of porn stored already. And said also that he didn't see any reason to not have a huge collection of porn because it was trivial to save the files, and storage is cheap. However, he's worried that his girlfriend will find out that he has what he considers a really huge collection of porn, and then think that he's a freak. So he's hidden the files on his desktop computer, and I was thrilled when he said that he'd hidden the files on the desktop computer. I was like, tell me, where have you hidden them? So we're at a party, and so he like is looking all around to make sure that she's not going to overhear. And he says, so I use Windows. You know how Windows has the Windows folder? So he put a hidden folder in the / Windows directory with a dummy name, and in that folder, there are folders named with letters and numbers that are all fake. And in one of those is then the whole directory, which he does have fairly well cataloged. So he has the different websites split out and when he, downloaded and if they're particular models that he's really liked. And he pointed out that usually he doesn't like there to be guys in his porn. So, but if there are multiple girls involved in a scene, then he specifies. And so he has a lot of detail in that. And so he's especially horrified at the thought that his girlfriend would find out, again, that he has this level of detail. But because I am a social scientist, it was okay to tell me. He said that his girlfriend would never look there in this Windows directory because she would be afraid of breaking something. So leaving aside one fellow who told me that he stores his porn in the cloud, by which he meant that there's so much porn online that he doesn't need to save any. He can just sort of have a little look around the web whenever he'd like to see some. All the other people I've spoken with personally also save pornographic text files or images or videos to their own computers. My sample so far is both small and a little unusual because, I have only made preliminary talks and I've been speaking with friends. And these are people who were comfortable talking to a friend about their use and their storage of pornography. So to date, I can't make really generalizable statements about those people. But I do find it interesting that so far the people I've spoken with have all had a strong interest in curating these collections because the context of the online pornography that they're interested in some way detracts from their enjoyment of the pornography. So even the guy with the Windows directory of the Abby Winters site, for instance, said that he much preferred downloading a set of images to his own machine so that he didn't have stuff flashing at him all the time. One woman I spoke with complained that it's nearly impossible to find images of the sex acts that she wants to see that are not part of what's, for her, an unpleasant or even sometimes violent narrative. She's interested in fisting, but apparently in the narrative context of pornography, this is somehow equivalent to really extreme stuff like scat or bondage or heavy sadomasochism. And so she sees her forays into the world of online pornography as sort of hunting and gathering missions in a hostile environment. So she can find, you know, the images or the short videos that she'll want to look at later, and she kind of, you know, avoids the stuff she doesn't want to see. The people that I've been speaking with so far are using flat file structures to organize their porn. No one's been using a relational database, even though in at least two cases, the amount of data and the cross-referencing that they talked about maybe wanting to do seemed like that might make it might be appropriate to use a relational database. But there was a sort of sheepishness about the idea. And I'll be really interested once I pursue this and talk to more people. I imagine that I will find some individuals who have taken on more thorough cataloging projects, and I'd like to hear how they've handled what they've done. I've had a tiny hint of one thing that is going on online, so that sort of cloud management of pornography, and that's that a lot of people are using Flickr. So it's a kind of hack of Flickr's system. You can get a free account, and without posting any pictures of your own, you can favorite other people's photos. So some people make separate accounts for each interest they have. I'm making an assumption. I haven't interviewed any of the holders of these accounts, but it seems to me that that's what's happening, because there seem to be special interest accounts. So there might be a foot account, or a knee-high socks account, or cleavage, or brunettes, or fisting. And so the favorites pages are full of just those images, maybe even hundreds of those images. This doesn't run up against any limits in the Flickr account because those are just the favorites, so there's no bandwidth storage issue on the free Flickr account. And if they like, they can also join groups on Flickr that cater to the same interests. And so within this free account, there's this really kind of nicely subdivided set of pornographic images and then links to other sites, pornographic images, and people discussing the same pornographic interests. So I think that's really clever, and I'm looking forward to kind of exploring that set of community, because I'd like to figure out, like, how did that come about and who figured that out? It's just another way of pornography driving technological use. And it's just this ginormous overlapping fractal fetish library that's the weird underside of Flickr. To talk about Ars Electronica again for a moment, here's a photograph from there. I wonder whether Flickr's API itself, or even just its general model, will offer a way for life logging to take off. Futurists like Clay Shirky and Charlie Strauss and Kevin Kelly have been talking about the dangers and the wonders of life logging for quite a while now, but it's not quite present reality yet. But it seems to me that all it would take is switching on all the cell phone cameras in the room, or all the EEPC built-in cameras, 24/7. There are a lot of them here. And suddenly, I'm looking at a Congress hall full of cam whores. And then all of you will have all of this wonderful footage, some of which will be fantastically hot and worth saving. And boom, then you've got another data stream that you've got to manage, because you'll have all of this great data and images and stuff. So this machine won the Prix Ars Electronica, and it is a fuckbot that the guy with the microphone there made. And the reason why it has such big lights there is because those are kind of film lights, and it has a camera so that the person being fucked by the robot is also being filmed. So there's kind of constant documentation of the robotic fucking. I think there's a lot that's clever about the machine, but I also think there's a lot that's disturbing about it. In retrospect, I wish I'd brought another photograph of another machine at Ars Electronica that's much more egalitarian, since it suddenly occurred to me that not everyone here would have seen all of the wonderful machines that were at the show. This machine has all of this. I'm going to walk away from the microphone to point at something and then come right back. That little silver dildo is the only point of interface with the receiver of the attention of the robot. Everything else going on with the robot seems to me to have to do with the interest of the person running it. So I thought that was kind of weird. Interesting, but weird. I have a project that is brewing for next year's Ars Electronica that I think sort of foreshadows the day when we'll be able to indulge in fully immersive AI-driven pornographic experiences, such as texting back and forth with an artificially intelligent SMS bot, sending texts back and forth and photos and audio to a perfectly responding, faraway Eliza partner. And we might also want some way to keep those experiences. But without some sort of index to all these data streams, we end up lost in an infinite library of data. What I don't know is if we're any more lost than we once were, though. We used to just have less porn. We used to just document less of our lives. At least, you know, as we get older, we'll have different memories to comfort us. And that's my conclusion. If any of you would like to comment not on the record, and would like to email me, this is my email address. If you'd like to offer to participate in a survey or interview at some time in the future, you could email me. I'm going to be applying for institutional review board approval to do a more formal survey of people, which is, I don't have that yet, and that's why the anecdotes that I've given you are very informal and non-detailed, but I think that there's enough there to do a more thorough academic study. I'm particularly interested in the way the intersection of privacy issues, taboos, and really information management kind of all come together to point to something that gets to the heart of what it means to be human. So I hope you agree, and thank you so much for listening. And I see a microphone being waved around.
Hello, is this on? So I guess my question is, like, why do you really think that we need to catalog all of this information? Like I can understand, I guess, as a sociological researcher, why it's interesting, but I think that for a lot of people, the only thing that they really care about with regard to pornography is whether or not it gets them off. So, like, it doesn't seem to me that, like, it doesn't seem like there is a lot of people crying out for better organization of pornography, and maybe that's the reason, you know, I mean...
I think that's a great question. I don't think that it's necessary, and in fact, if people are happy with how their porn is stored, then I certainly wouldn't want to mandate or even imply that they're doing anything wrong with how they're managing their own porn collection. What I am curious about, there are two parts to this. One is, academically, if there are collections of porn that are held by, say, university libraries or research libraries, I would like those to be better cataloged so that other people with academic interests in them, or even just members of the community who have any interest in them, can find them. Currently, if you want to read a book, you know, of some other nature, you can find that book. Just because a book is pornographic doesn't mean that suddenly you lose the right to find it. So that's the main thing. In the other case, someone's private collection of pornography, now that it's easy to keep an enormous collection, it seems to me that it's equivalent to just jumbling up all of your books in a huge pile. And how do you know what's there if you don't somehow... you know, name the files and put them in folders of some sort. If that doesn't matter to you, then it doesn't matter, and that's fine.
My question would be... Okay.
Go ahead.
To the nice guy who posted the first question, I am interested in cataloging my porn.
Yes.
And so... So I've been wondering what tools and programs and methods you've encountered or you would recommend.
As I said, the people I've spoken with are really just using a kind of very flat folder system. It's really the electronic equivalent of having a filing system, and it's not very deeply organized, neither is it cross-referenced. I would think that at the point where you wanted to tag things semantically in some way, where you had genres and performers and sex acts and anything else going on in the scene or the clip or the, you know, who the producer was or the director or the publisher, that you'd want some other kind of database structure, and that you might seek out other kinds of semantic tagging tools and some kind of relational database. That's why I want to do more research. So I apologize for not being more helpful right this second. But please feel free to email me. Right here? Oh, Picasa, somebody just said. I just overheard that somebody said, try using Picasa.
Okay, you're talking about one approach to having to looking at pornography, about collecting a lot of pornography and cataloging it. But there's another way, is getting pornography wherever you want it. And I have... I don't have any collection of porn, but I have written quite sophisticated programs for getting pornography from the internet automatically. They scrap multiple... so they look at multiple meta-index servers and do some multi-threaded downloading and whatever filtering and stuff like that. And what I'm wondering is how many people in the audience are willing to admit to doing something like that? Thank you.
So, could people raise their hands again? I didn't quite see.
All right. I
saw about 30 hands. So other people who are scraping the web for porn, and that rocks. Okay, next question.
I just have two comments.
Sure.
One being about tagging. I think mainstream movies, they're just tagged in drama and action, which is very hard to find what I want. If I'm looking for porn, it's much easier because I go to, I don't know, DP or whatever.
Yeah.
So, I think it's not totally fair to say that porn isn't very well tagged, because it's tagged much better. And the other comment is about ordering things and sorting them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mainstream and porn has the same thing. It's just seen and unseen. These are...
Hello.
Hello.
This is kind of funny. My name is Gadi. And I seem to do this every Congress. I'm really ashamed. I was sitting in the speaker room. And
you were?
People, yeah, and people were still forbidden to talk to me earlier. And people were listening to your lecture. Really funny, by the way. Thank you. And somebody said, I don't know who it was. Sorry, I want to hear. Nobody's crying out. They said a lot of other smart things. Nobody's crying out for better organization of porn. So I just flew out of the speaker room. And I'm a big guy, as everybody can see, right? And while I admittedly and shamedly would, with a lot of shame, admit I have no porn on my computer, really, really, I'm the only one in the room probably, I am officially crying out for a better organization of porn any seconds. Anybody second me? So now I can go back to a very important email on my computer. Thank you for giving the talk.
Thank you, Gaudi.
Hello.
Hello.
Also, thanks for the interesting talk.
I lost where the microphone is. Oh, way in the back. Hello.
Just a question. Did you encounter any cultural differences between Asia, Europe, and the U.S. about pornography and sorting, or the feeling or bad feelings about it?
To date, my sample is small enough and only restricted to a handful of American friends. Hopefully, by opening up the floodgates at a packed room at an international hacker conference, I will get some input from an international audience. I am sure that those cultural differences exist about feelings and opinions about pornography. I really don't have a guess about the organizational aspect. The one guess I'm willing to make is that there would be a correlation between embarrassment, and unwillingness to organize, so that someone who was more embarrassed would be less willing to organize, because that would mean sort of looking twice at the pornographic material. Whether that then correlates to anything that maps culturally or not, I really wouldn't be willing to guess off the top of my head. There is a hand up there.
Or here?
And there's a hand here.
Oh, yeah.
You go first. He doesn't have the mic yet.
All right. I was wondering, how many people have you actually yet interviewed about the porn collection, and how many of them were female?
Sure.
Just one more.
Uh-huh.
Double question, kind of like.
Sure.
And wait a second. it was like, I was wondering how you approach people about your research. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you start it? How do you establish contact?
So,
do you just go ahead and like ask? I mean, I'm a social researcher, and I was wondering if you have any porn on your PC or something. How do you do it?
Well, so I have talked so far to 8 people, 3 of whom are women, and some of those people's porn collections were already known to me because 2 of the women participate heavily in slash communities, and one of the men has actually made a point of cataloging his porn. So it's something that he's discussed before, and that was actually one reason why I'd given some thought to the matter years ago, really. The conversation that I described in the most detail, actually, though, was one where I was actually kind of outed at a party. So The fellow who was hiding his porn from his girlfriend, it was broached to him, hey, she's a sociologist and she's studying porn. And he busted up laughing. Like, he cracked up. And he was like, you're a graduate student and they let you study porn? Wah. And he said, I study porn. And I'm one of my best sort of, like, I'm awesome. So I said, would you like to tell me about it? And actually once we had a sort of initial interchange, he then spoke really seriously about, well, actually, so this is what I do. And he was very open to discussing it. And it was a really interesting conversation. So he was the person I knew least well, but he was very open about the discussion. It was great.
I just wanted to comment on how you'd say the probability of people cataloging their stuff might be less
you,
if they're
I'm
more
sorry, emba- could you speak?
If they if they are more embarrassed about cataloging it and it being too intense, I don't know. It might be comparable to how some tit magazine relates to some glamour. Photos, and I don't know if someone feels he's very sophisticated about cataloging his porn. I wouldn't just say it that it might be related. That's so directly related. People might say they have very special sorting methods, etc., because that way they don't spend all the time getting off, but more time having an intellectual kind
okay,
of.
Okay, I see. So it's a kind of distance. It might be a kind of distancing mechanism. That seems entirely possible. I'm not sure how much time we have. In fact, I see some people starting to come into the room. So if could I get an angel or a timekeeper to wave at me and tell me if we have time for another one or two questions? No one is kicking us out, so I'll let you...
That's me again.
Hello.
I'm a bit notorious about porn, so that's why.
So am I.
Anyway, about this sorting issue, I think, like for myself, I feel the only thing I feel bad about with my porn habits is the time I invest in it to find it, download it. You know, get the whole thing done. And then... and once I'm, you know... I can't spend more time on it because I've been spending half an hour on it and, you know, I should do something for my wife and my child and everything, and then I can't sort it. So I think that might be a point as well, that time management, maybe, could be. Give us iTunes and ID3 tags.
Well, you know, one of the things that's so, for instance, you know, if I tag something in Delicious, if I save something on Delicious that's a website that somebody else has saved, then often a lot of other people have already saved that site, and then it pops up and it's already been tagged. But, you know, people don't save their porn images to Delicious, and so those sites aren't already tagged. So there isn't a lot of metadata attached to those images. Although somebody else pointed out that commercial porn does come with a lot of data, and I would say that that's actually true, so that, you know, for instance, if you're looking for particular sex acts or... combinations of performers or women and men or two men or two women or whichever, you can choose those things and so you know what you're getting. I would say that the point I was making about the lack of good cataloging would be at the academic level, where something was coming into an academic library without any data attached to it. So there's a kind of disparity there between a kind of commercial mainstream pornography and something that's somehow risen into the level of, oh, it should be in the library collection, but we kind of don't want to look at it anymore. We'll buy it, but nobody should see it. So that's what I meant to talk about. Okay. Are there more questions?
Stand up.
Somebody in the middle there.
Yep.
Does he have a microphone? You do have a microphone. Okay.
Yeah, most of the things you talked about were people organizing porn for themselves, except
yes.
for the Flickr thing, and mm-hmm. also for legal access of porn. Have you yet interviewed anybody who has stored porn for illegal access of others? Were there any difference, or would you guess there would be any difference if people are storing porn not only for themselves but also for access of others?
For the access of others, and I'm sorry, let me repeat the rest of your question. So you're asking whether there's any difference, whether I think there would be any difference in someone storing pornography for the access of other people, and whether that would be for... You were suggesting illegal access, so just illegal because of copyright issues or illegal because of the content of the pornography? I couldn't hear that.
For copyright issues.
For copyright issues. I think that in a lot of cases, for instance, with the Flickr photographs, the issue with favoriting kind of sidesteps the copyright issue because at least within the Flickr paradigm, favoriting doesn't break copyright. It's part of their terms of service. None of the people that I've spoken to already were setting up servers or putting material online so that other people could access the material that they had saved or were distributing anything. I do think that that would be a difference. I don't know how that would play out. I mean, there would be, you know, file sharing issues. I mean, I'm not naive. Obviously, people do file share porn, but it seems like that's a whole other issue. And so, I was looking more at individual use and storage as opposed to that larger topic. There's a question in the back, and I think maybe one more question after that. Okay. So that one and one there.
Hi. Actually, I was just wondering, we're talking about storing porn on file systems, and people brought in their big laptops to suck porn. However, did anybody reckon that there are about 180 million porn stuff on YouTube? New porn. So I was just wondering, who's using, or who ever logged on to YouPorn? Please raise your hands. It's so little. Oh, come on. All right. It doesn't matter. I mean, we're talking about tagging porn, et cetera, et cetera. So whoever wasn't there, youporn.com, you can watch your neighbors and watch commercial porn. And it's actually, I was just wondering why we're still burning DVDs and coming here to download porn from the Ethernet, where we have so much porn online. So move on.
Actually, there's one more question to my left here. So stage right, and then that's going to be the last question. So you're right there.
Yeah, hi. I'm just interested in how do you define porn? Because of what you show in the slides was not porn. It was erotic, nude photography or something like this, but it was not porn. So where's your border between erotic photography, nude photography, and porn?
I was hoping I was going to get out of here without being asked that question, but I'm willing to tackle it. I made a choice to have the slides that I showed today be pretty far on the side of things that are not really pornographic, as you have pointed out. So, you know, in terms of the question, what is porn, the things that I was showing were not porn. They were suggestive of porn, but not themselves pornography. And as to why, I just felt that it would be kind of really charged and hard to control the presentation if I were to bring in really extreme images as examples for what I wanted to discuss. As for where the line itself is between, say, erotica and pornography, I think that that can be a very individual thing. I think that graphic depictions of explicit sex are almost always pornographic, and I think that, you know, artful nudes are almost always not. I'm not going to, you know, I don't feel really qualified to make a clear, you know, declaration of what is porn. In the discussions that I've had with people so far, I've been letting them define what porn is for them. And so the two women I spoke with who participate in Slash communities, most of their files are text files of, of written pornography, which they certainly consider porn, which they used to get off, and which they, you know, it's porn. I don't know that somebody else looking at it would say, like, whoa, that's porn, and I'm offended, or not. As a sociologist in that situation, it's a moment where I want to let the subject tell me what porn is. So I hope that's not frustrating to you, but... two more questions? Okay, two more questions. Choose wisely. Speak wisely.
Hey, Rose. So will you tell us, where do you store your porn and how do you catalog it?
Cool. For somebody as interested in porn as I am, I really don't have a lot. It's on my desktop computer. It's in folders. Sorry. I meant it's in folders as opposed to having like a sort of pointer structure saying like, oh, this is where that's located, but then like I have, you know, like a lot of different ways to access it. Like it's not like I've got gigs and gigs of stuff that then I have to like get at some other kind of way. I actually have a folder labeled porn. And then within that folder, I have a folder that says videos, and a folder that says photos, and a folder that says stories. So it's pretty simplistic. I'm really not worried about my mom rummaging through my computer, so that's not a problem. Does that answer your question? You made me blush. It's really awesome. Kelly made me blush. One more question. All the way in the back.
Just a small comment about the U-porn thing. I think many Germans were on the site to look around why this site was blocked by a bigger German provider, internet service provider.
So U-porn was blocked in Germany?
Short time.
For a short time?
About half a month or so.
So is it blocked now or not?
I have no idea. But I think many Germans...
Lazy Congress, tell me, is U-porn blocked or not?
I think many Germans have looked there, and so many hands were up.
So while U-porn was blocked, where did Germans go to get porn? Folders. Okay. Awesome.